Automate, survive, thrive. The time is now. The Automation Alliance podcast brought to you by RapidMation.
Welcome to this edition of the Automation Alliance podcast. Today we welcome Graham Penman, the co-founder of a company called Jam Automation based out of the United Kingdom. Prior to starting up Jam early in 2021, Graham ran product development, he led pre-sales, and he managed professional services for various automation software vendors across the globe. Graham, welcome to the Automation Alliance podcast.
Hey, Sean, thanks very much. It's a pleasure to be invited to chat with you. Always a pleasure to chat to you about all things automation and such like. I think the last time we talked a lot about golf, but today it's all about automation. So yeah, really, really pleased to be here and chat with you. You doing well?
Yeah, very good. Thank you, mate. Very good. And reminds me of that golf conversation we had. I think I was telling you about a bot that I built to automatically book my golf tee off times at the golf club, right? So that's still functioning really well. And some of the older members are still not so happy with me, but it's all good. All good.
Automation absolutely anywhere. It's amazing to be able to do that kind of stuff with automation technologies. But yeah, some cool examples I think we'll talk through later on the podcast.
Yeah, brilliant, mate. Well, so for some of the listeners, I guess they may not have heard about Jam Automation before, and obviously it's fairly new, but I know that you and the rest of the Jam Automation team have been doing all things automation for many years now. So let's start at the beginning of the story, right? Can you start by telling the listeners a little bit about Jam Automation, what you guys do, and why you and the team decided to start Jam Automation?
Yeah, perfect. I'll give you the short version of the story with us and Jam Automation. You know, my background and our background has really been in independent software vendors for most of our careers. You know, I worked, as you mentioned, in all aspects of the businesses, for product companies, from professional services to product to customer success. And over the last kind of year or two, we really started to notice a change in pattern in the conversations we were having with customers and people looking at automation technologies. And the real shift was really people weren't looking to buy generic kind of technologies. So I've worked primarily in the platform space where you take a platform, you build things on it. And they were moving towards kind of, how do I actually just solve business problems? What's the challenges I'm having? And how do we really kind of solve this particular problem that I'm having in my organization? And the conversations we're having were like, look, there's the competing voices in the world, vendors, experts. It's noisy with people claiming to be the best at this and doing the best at that. And customers were really finding it hard to decide what the right tool for the right job was, or how to pull multiple technologies together to form that kind of cohesive end-to-end solution. And that's kind of a skill in itself, being able to see all the moving parts and go, actually, do you know what? This piece would work well here, it'd work well here. And how do you kind of join these things together and see that kind of bigger picture? And they were moving away from, especially the larger customers, moving away from big, expensive, monolithic solutions to going, actually, what we need is the ability to have the best of breed technologies connected together as a platform that allows us to be more versatile and agile in the way that we deliver solutions to our either end customers, the people consuming our products or services, or our internal customers. And we realize that you really need a change in mindset when you take that on. That kind of the ability to swap things out with different products and things like that is quite a, you know, a developer thing, you know, microservice architecture and all this kind of stuff. It was really residing within IT. And to do that, you know, at scale in process automation, we kind of realized you need a bit of a mindset shift with an organization. So we got together and said, if we look at the most successful projects we've been involved in and implementations and why were they successful, what were those kind of success factors? And it really boiled down to two things. I don't think these are revolutionary in what I'm about to say, but they're the core of what we do at Jam. And it was about great people who have enthusiasm, vision, innovative natures, the clarity of thought, people who have got problems that they need to solve and can think about how they're going to solve them, bringing great people together and then enabling them with the right technologies. So how do we combine those two things together? So the question then became, how do we then do that? And how can we do that better than we've been able to do potentially at a software vendor who focuses on maybe solving one part of the much bigger solution or challenge that they're facing. So here's kind of what we do. We said, well, we need to train people, we need to advise, we need to consult people who are responsible for delivering automation within a company. So that's really the focus on the people, or supplement the skills that they need to be successful in automation. So that's the people side, a real focus on that. But that second piece is then, well, they of course need to be supported by technologies. So we said, well, what are the 5 or 6 key technology stacks that we think really make that end-to-end process automation platform tick and you can really get value out of the solution for? So we said, okay, let's look at a workflow provider. Let's provide RPA. Let's provide document generation. And then the kind of two technologies in the practical AI space. And I'll probably name drop some of the vendors that we work with later on and talk a bit more about them. But really it was all about how do we help customers be skilled up and provide the right tools for the right jobs connected together to form an end-to-end solution, focusing on great people and great technology. So that's probably the longer story about how we started, but it's all about the right people and the right technology, bringing them together to make people successful in what can be a tricky way to pull things together to build an end-to-end process automation solution.
I mean, that resonates so much with me, right? And we always talk to our customers about automation is all about people and how we help people do more with less. And I love the fact that your mantra at JAM is summed up as follows, right? And I quote something from your website. There are two absolutely critical aspects to successful automation in companies, people and technology, and people come first. And I could not agree more with that statement. And I wanted to explore that a bit further in terms of kind of getting your viewpoints on some of the things we see in the market around specifically citizen development, right? And for those listeners who have not heard the term citizen developer before, it's a phrase used to describe the growing trend of employees within companies who create business apps in the workplace using these low-code technology platforms and cloud services. So Graham, while citizen developers are not a new concept, I'm keen to hear what you're seeing in the UK. And is that concept of citizen developers starting to mature and evolve from what you're seeing?
Yeah, it's an interesting question on citizen development and what that looks like. Are we starting to see it evolve? I think there are circumstances in businesses where we do see that. Take some of the smaller enterprises in the UK and Ireland and throughout Europe. You know, the people who don't have large IT budgets and, you know, an expansive IT team who can build things and move things around and deliver projects and maybe don't have the resource to pull people in. I think we see a lot of that citizen development at that scale, being able to, how do I personally use these toolings to be able to rapidly build solutions to the challenges I'm facing on a day-to-day basis? They're maybe not enterprise-wide end-to-end processes, but they solve a particular challenge that I meet in my job. So I think at that level, yeah, it's starting to take off. Is it mainstream? I don't think it is. And I think there's various reasons for that that we can maybe go into. I think maybe from an IT perspective, there's kind of pushback in those kind of areas around, you know, who controls citizen development. And we can discuss some interesting points on how we combat that. I think there's, you know, the Gartner, I think, tried to say back in 2009 that, you know, everyone will become a developer. I think, you know, that's a lofty aim, and citizen development is a lofty goal and an admirable goal to move to. Should everyone be a developer? No. If you want to be and you have the mindset to be able to solve these challenges, should you be able to do that? Yes, there should be a pathway for you to be able to do that. I think there's a, maybe not on the citizen development, but I see a big shift, and maybe it's the precursor to citizen development in the UK, is citizen involvement in the process automation space. So more and more, and I've given a few talks on it and a few webinars on it in the past, is around user experience and design. And really getting the people who have got the problem or have seen the area for process automation or become more effective in what they do, to really take that and be able to use a tool to describe what they do and how it should work in practice. They're maybe not the person who takes that and then builds it, but they're involved at a very deep level in defining what that looks like, because they're the ones who do this every single day. So you know, maybe from our perspective, are we seeing a big push for citizen development? We're seeing a lot of talk around it. Are we seeing a lot of action onto it? Not particularly, but we are seeing maybe the precursor to that of more people who have the specialist knowledge of their subject area get involved in the process of helping drive the end solution in innovation. Because most of the ideas, I mean, if I go into a financial institution or a legal firm or things like that, I'm not proclaiming to be an expert in what they do. Yes, I've worked with people in those spaces before. I know some of the lingo and things like that, but it's the people who are in the trenches day to day that really can come up with really innovative ideas. And what we have to do as process automation experts is make it as easy as possible to transfer those ideas and concepts for innovation into practical solutions. And I think some of the tooling that, you know, you guys work with, we work with, that's available can help with that. And I think it can get you so far. But I think there's a little bit to go on really making kind of citizen developers kind of ubiquitous in its nature throughout organizations.
Yeah, some really interesting insights there, right? And I love that terminology used there on citizen involvement, right? And it's quite interesting because I always say to our customers, right, it's all about understanding processes firstly, right? And I always use the analogy, if I spoke to three different people in the organization and I asked them how their, I don't know, accounts payable process ran, I would get three very different answers. Yeah. And you can't actually go through and automate or make a process better unless you truly understand that process to start. And only once you've understood that process and you've used things like collaboration and getting everyone's opinions on how it actually runs, then can you move ahead into the automation space.
Yeah. And I think that's right. So the interesting thing about that piece is, so through and working with customers around requirements analysis and business analysts, and if there's business analysts listening to this, and forgive me for my wrong use of terminology here, but there's this concept of kind of inferred knowledge of process. So if you're the one doing it on a day-to-day basis and you ask someone to write down what the process is that you do or capture that process in a way, which is why it's great there's lots of tools on the market that allow task capture, that allow you to really track what a person actually does, not just their head knowledge of what they do, but that inferred knowledge where they will say, oh, I do this, but actually in between those steps of the process that they're describing to you, there's like three other things that they just do naturally that are so natural to them that they forget to say that actually this is what I need to do. So although we can kind of map as best we can end-to-end process and how that all works, there's a lot of inherent knowledge sitting there that maybe isn't captured through that requirements analysis or the questions and answers that you pose to people. So I think that's why, you know, it's key in that trend towards, you know, actually how do we use technology to better capture all these things as well as implement at the very end. And maybe on the citizen developer front, my experience from product management in another company, I use this as the example of, you know, as a product manager who had various products underneath them, there was at times where I, you know, would sit with the development team and go, do you know what? I want a button here. And that button, I think, should do this, this, and this, right? And they're like, okay. And then like 2 months later, I'm like, so why is that button not on the product? And they're like, well, we're still trying to define kind of what it does. Because inherently under the hood, there's a lot of different things that you have to think about when it comes to what happens when this happens, what happens when that happens, and things like that. And that's why I think there's a step between the kind of citizen development of personal productivity and things that are, to me, when we look at UiPath, robotics, digital assistants, where you are, the things you're doing on a day-to-day basis that impact you, you can automate yourself, compared to organizational transformation of end-to-end process, where they're a bit more involved, more stakeholders, more things you need to think about, the consequences of certain actions and what that means for other downstream processes and things like that. So as I say, citizen development in the bottom end to automate day-to-day things that you might be able to do that are only particular to you or your team. And then as we branch out from that, we get into that more complex kind of end-to-end process where you maybe need some more specialist skills to do so.
Yeah, 100%, right? And I guess I can look at that citizen development piece as one piece of the puzzle, right? So while citizen developers are key and they're a key part to any automation program, and we often refer to that as the bottom-up approach, right? Meaning that these citizen developers can automate kind of task-based things that they may do on a day-to-day basis. But that absolutely needs to be complemented by what we call top-down automations, right? And what top-down automations are is that generally organizations have an automation center of excellence, and these automation center of excellences can create these processes that then obviously are some of those bigger, wider automations across the business. And once you combine that bottom-up approach with the top-down approach, that's where UiPath famously talk about something called the automation flywheel, right? And that starts to spin, and that fusion of the bottom up and top down allows companies to see huge success in their automation programs. So again, I completely agree with you there. I don't think citizen developers is the only thing. Is it important? Yes. Is it still maturing? 100%. But it is one piece of the automation puzzle. All right. Well, it's when we talk about citizen developers, right, often this word called democratization comes up, right? And it's quite a big word and people have different understandings of it. How would you define democratization?
Oh, we could go all philosophical on this, but let's not. let's keep it to the tech world on this. I think, you know, if I was to define it, I'd probably say something like, you know, it's given people a voice that they didn't have before. So, you know, if we think about in tech companies, who drives, I mean, you talked about this kind of bottom-up versus top-down approach. We look at who drives the innovation strategies or the IT strategies within business. And it was very top-down, you shall do this, you shall do that. And these are the boundaries that we put in place. And sometimes for very good reason, we put these boundaries in place. But what was lost was that ability to have people involved in that process and people to have a say and people to be able to contribute and really share their innovative ideas or to get involved in building proof of concepts to say, actually, if I was going to do this because I do this day in, day out, this is my job, this is how I would like to approach this job because I think this is the way that we should be doing it and for these reasons. So that democratization part is both in giving people a voice they didn't have before, but also giving them the ability to get on the tools to deliver things they couldn't do before. As I say, like, you know, I want the screen to look like this by allowing them to use a drag and drop designer, or I want the process to look like this as an end-to-end because I think that's the way that we need to be doing it for these reasons. So giving them and empowering them to be able to get hands-on with the tech and be more involved in that process is a great thing. So yeah, I think it's summing it up to say getting people involved who weren't able to be involved before. And that comes across through the tooling, comes across through the actual process of getting automation in place and the ability to, yeah, just coordinate better across an organization to really drive forward innovative ideas from people in the trenches who are actually doing the job day to day and who really, as process automation experts in IT, we're really there to serve. You know, we're not there to block, we're there to listen to those people and say, how do we best serve you? And how do we enable you to do your job better, more effectively, and see the great benefits from that. So that was maybe a longer answer to that. I don't know what do you think about the democratization? What's your view on how we define that in process automation?
Yes, I kind of think of it, and I might give an example of kind of how we democratize that use of technology, right? So often some of the sessions we run for our customers is we call it the build a bot session, right? So basically there's people in the organization that might have heard about automation in some way, shape or form. They might not know too much about it. And what we do is we invite them along to a session, generally a two-hour session. There's no pre kind of knowledge needed on what they need to know or have experience in terms of automation. And what we do is we actually get them to build their very first software bot. So in a two-hour session from knowing nothing about the tooling, we can get them to build a software bot that kind of logs into a website, downloads an Excel spreadsheet, lives through an Excel spreadsheet and pushes some data into a website, right? Which is arguably kind of some very common scenarios that these citizen developers or business users might come across. But then the really interesting thing is that after that two-hour session, we leave those tools with them for a couple of weeks. And 2 weeks later, we come back and we have a session called the Present Your Bot session, right? And what we do in the Present Your Bot is we ask those business users to have a go using those tools and technologies to build something that may affect their day-to-day life in business. And mate, I am continually amazed by what those business users managed to do in those 2 weeks and some of the problems they managed to solve. And for me, that is the epitome of the democratization of technology, right? Taking people in a very short time frame, teaching them a little bit about the tools, but then leaving them to it to obviously use all those beautiful qualities and skills that we have as humans, to obviously use that ingenuity and innovate and actually create solutions to problems for us. So yeah, I think that's how I kind of look at the democratization of technology.
Yeah, it's interesting you said, because you go back to kind of the introduction I gave as to who we are at Jam, that conversation we have with customers over and over again around, like, customers and organizations and businesses, they don't know what they don't know. So if we, you know, sometimes we do really unofficial marketing tests when we talk to customers, and we just name drop technologies and technology spaces, like, oh, have you heard about RPA? Or, you know, we use acronyms to get a clarity as to whether people have heard of these things before, and people don't know what they don't know. Have you heard of something called a software robot that can do this? And it's amazing that we spend a lot of our time in this world of process automation, and it's second nature to us to know and understand these things. But organizations are rightly focused on serving their customers and what they do as a business, that sometimes they don't have the time or the expertise or the ability to be able to go off and go, oh, what are the new trends in technology and where can they actually help? What's the latest technology that's going to help me solve this problem? So it's down to us in industry to be able to really give them a clear example. And I think, you know, what you're talking about there about taking people from nothing in terms of their knowledge of our technology and then having them present back in a couple of weeks is, yeah, a phenomenal example of seeing how innovative people can be when they really take hold of a technology, be able to run with it and see the art of the possible and really drive that innovation message home with them to say, look, these are the tools. Think about how this might impact. Here's one use case, but actually how do you take that concept and then apply it to different situations and think about where this applies to your role within your organization?
Yeah, absolutely right. And it reminds me of a piece of research I was reading, and I believe it was from Accenture. And I think it was called the Technology Vision 2021, the technology trends which will shape the future. And I seem to recall there was kind of six trends. And the first one was technology is democratizing. Natural language processing, low-code platforms, and robotic process automation are adding a grassroots layer to enterprise innovation strategies. With democratized technology, every employee can be an innovator, empowered to create technology-driven solutions on their own. So I know that you guys at Jam, right? And we spoke a little bit about those very specific tools that you have in your intelligent automation toolbox. And kind of some of the categories you mentioned was workflow, robots, document generation, and practical AI. But I saw your recent announcement that you partnered with a company called Druid. So take the listeners through a little bit more about Druid and how that fits into that landscape.
Absolutely. So Druid is a chatbot platform, and they'll kill me for saying it's a chatbot platform because it's more than that. It's actually really an intelligent communication platform that, you know, if traditionally you look at chatbots, and I wrote an article about this last week about, you know, the traditional way of looking at chatbots to, you know, converse with people on a web page. So give you more information about something, but actually that conversational way of interacting with systems is more and more prevalent. So how do we enable organizations to be able to communicate with process automation and get access to information, knowledge, advice, kickoff service requests, capture information, read information in a different format that's more conversational, give you the experience of, you know, in a previous company, if I wanted to know how many holidays I had left on my annual leave entitlement or my PTO, I would have to, you know, drop a note to my HR lead and say, hey, can you give me this information? It'd take them time, go off, read the system, come back, send me an email back, right? I mean, that's clearly inefficient and a complete waste of the HR lead's time. They've got more pressing things to deal with, the human aspect of HR, the things that really matter. But with a chatbot, how do we then, you know, just ask a question somewhere and say, how many annual days leave do I have? And the chatbot comes back and says, this is all the information you need. Would you like to then apply for annual leave? You've clearly made a request. The next logical step is to say, okay, well, would you like to apply for it? So in a much more conversational way, be able to interact with processes, gain information, But not only that, we mentioned the intelligent part, and it's in our practical AI section. I'll probably talk a little bit about why we call it practical AI in a second. But in the practical AI bit, is it's more to do with not just having that conversation, but how do we intelligently pull out key bits of information? So using things like named entity recognition, right? So that's just a fancy term for like pulling pieces of key information out of unstructured data. So if I've got a paragraph, it has names, dates, places, things like that. How do I pull the data out of that unstructured paragraph of information? So it does things like that. And based on those conversations and those data points and those conversations you have, how do you then triage, move the conversation down an intelligent way with the end user that's interacting with it? And also with chatbot technology, it's not just about that little guy on a website or girl on the website that pops up and says, can I have a conversation with you about something? It's actually really about meeting the users where they're at. So those channels of communication are wildly different to what they were before. So before, we just saw a little pop-up on the website, have a little conversation with the chatbot. But actually, more and more users now in the enterprise world are using Microsoft Teams. So how do you have a conversation with a chatbot on Teams where you're actually working, trying to ensure that you meet the users of the technology where they are? For B2C, more likely to be WhatsApp, Facebook, Twilio for text messages, something like that, and have conversations over different channels and then manage that centrally. And then more importantly, for kind of larger institutions, when you're thinking about customer support, you maybe have a chatbot that allows users to ask some questions, what's happening with this, raise a support ticket, something like that. If there becomes a point in a conversation where the chatbot can't deal with it, then how do you then intelligently move that onto a live chat situation where you can have a conversation with a human being who can solve some more complex problems that aren't quite as prescriptive as a chatbot can handle? And the Druid platform wraps this up in a really simplistic way, allows you to define conversations, allows you to train it to recognize, uses natural language processing to be able to recognize the type of requests that are coming in and send the conversation down an intelligent path based on the responses that you get, capture all that information, and then make decisions based on it, and also integrate with other systems as well. So we've talked a little bit about UiPath with robotics. So maybe there's a point in the process where we need to get customer information from a hard to reach system in the back end. Well, the Druid chatbot can say, okay, I'm just getting your organization information or your customer information, kicks off a robot. The robot goes off and gets that information from another system, passes it back to the chat. So you can then use that intelligently to drive the conversation down further. So really it's an interactive communication platform using conversational artificial intelligence to be able to drive kind of process for businesses and customers who use them.
Yeah, some brilliant kind of use cases in there, right? And one of the things that I always say to Casper is it's kind of like, if we look at what's happened in the world of work, right? The world of work isn't a place that you go anymore. It's a thing that you do, right? And along that line, people want to be able to work any place, anywhere, anytime. And chatbots are a great solution to some of those problems, right? Referencing your HR example that you gave there, if I want to work at 10 p.m. at night and I want to be able to then go get my leave request balance from a back-end system, I shouldn't have to kind of reach out to a human user to do that. I should be able to have a conversation through a conversational interface where I can actually tell that conversational interface what I'm looking for, and that can drive some process to go and get me the answer I need. Again, that can be anywhere, anytime, any place. And that for me is kind of one of the key things of where chatbots and voice bots come into this intelligent automation landscape, and it solves some of those problems for us. Okay, well, moving back to that report, right? The next important piece was the mirrored world trend. And what they said around the mirrored world trend is they state digital twins are proliferating across many enterprises and industries and driving an irreversible inflection point, the birth of the mirrored world, right? So digital twins is an interesting kind of phrase because it's used in the tech world in a couple of different scenarios. But in this scenario, it's actually also what it's referring to is the concept of a robot for every person. And for those people or listeners that may have not heard about that concept before, a robot for every person is a vision from UiPath, which is a robotic process automation platform that seeks to empower every worker at an organization with a robot assistant. And these robot assistants are there to help those human users to do things faster, smarter, and more accurately. So if we think about these digital twins, I mean, I'm interested to hear, what are you seeing in the digital twin space in the UK? How fast are they being adopted? Is it becoming the new way of work? Or what are you guys seeing over that side?
Yeah, I think a bit like the citizen development. I think we talk about it a lot as being the next thing. I think in terms of catching on, I think it's getting to the point where people are understanding what the technology is there to be able to achieve. I had a really interesting conversation. This was about 3 or 4 years ago, just when, you know, RP has been around for a while, but it was just starting to kind of move into the mainstream. People started to talk about it a little bit more. And I was talking to somebody about this and going, look, you can use it for personal productivity to be able to do this, that, and the next thing. And the guy turned around and went, you know, I've been doing this for years. Like I created macros like ages ago that would allow me to script the day-to-day tasks that I do, which allowed me to focus on other things that I can do with my time, more meaningful things that I really require more of my input than sending out, you know, request emails, things like that. And I think, you know, that is exactly what we're talking about here when we talk about these kind of robot for every person or digital twins, things like that. It's all about, you know, how do we take the mundane out of people's jobs and what they do, take all the things that they maybe don't need to spend their time on and spend their time on more meaningful work that they do. Is it catching on? I think it is, but it's slow. I think in the UK, I don't know what you guys are seeing out in your kind of geography, but it's a bit more of a slow process to be able to pick this up. And I think the only way that we can start to really see that drive forward and the benefits for that is to really show people the art of the possible about what this means. I think, you know, you look in the Microsoft stack, with something like Flow or something like that, where, you know, that was about that personal productivity. I used Flow a lot for monitoring emails to be able to say, okay, well, if this email comes in and it's from my colleague Anton, just bin it because I don't really want to. I'm joking. I don't really want to read that email. And then, you know, what do we do? What do we do with this email? Do I have to respond to it? Things like that. So all about that kind of that repeatable process that we do. And I think it will become a new way to work. I think we've got some way to go to allow people to adopt it easier. In that, I think UiPath are doing a great job with Studio X and a few of the kind of the newer real citizen developer tools to allow you to build your own automations and do that in a very easy and configurable way. And I think once we really start driving that through, I think we're going to see a lot more adoption of it. It's the right way to go. I just think we need to, as process experts, be able to, you know, debunk some of the myths around it, make it easier for people to see the way of adopting it and really drive, again, as you say, having those innovation sessions with customers to show the art of the possible, to really get them to see how this can help them in the way that they work and the benefits to them. I don't know, how do you see it, Sean, out in Australia and APAC?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely right. I think a few things there. I think I liked your analogy, and I often kind of, if I'm trying to explain robotic process automation to someone that may have never kind of heard about it before, the first analogy I go to is using the macro analogy, right? Because I think people are so familiar with those macros, what they can actually do. But the way that I then explain it is I say, well, actually, it's like having a macro, but then being able to give it a range of different superpowers, right? Mm. And those superpowers are actually different forms of artificial intelligence. And that kind of sounds a bit like buzzword bingo, but that's kind of what a lot of the press and all those types of things that you read is about. But really, those superpowers allow us to give these bots different pieces of functionality, right? So one example might be, I don't know, to be able to automatically extract data from a document and then go use that data in some way, shape, or form. Or perhaps even in kind of the chatbot scenario we're talking about is to pick up sentiment in a piece of text. So to figure out if someone's happy, sad, or indifferent. And perhaps if they're sad, then redirect a human directly into that conversation to solve their problem. So I think going back to this concept of a robot for every person, I'm personally very excited about it, but I do agree with you. I think there's a lot of education and a lot of art of the possible that we need to kind of guide people through to show them that it's not just another macro. Mm-hmm. It's really about macros with a range of different superpowers. And when you have a range of different superpowers, really the possibilities are endless in terms of what you may be able to automate.
Absolutely. I think that's a responsibility that falls down on various different, you know, people and organizations worldwide to make that happen and really get that education out there. People like yourselves and us and others who we need to make the complex simple our job is to not speak in jargon or to do this. It's to really make tangible solutions viable for people and see how they can actually impact them and really distill that down into how do you really do this in practice? Let's forget about all the buzzwords. Let's forget about all the trends and all this kind of stuff. But how do we solve your problems? And this is, these digital twins, these robotic process automation, in many cases, are a fantastic way to be able to drive that in organizations.
Yeah, definitely. All right, changing gears a little bit, right? I know that for many years you worked in the document generation space, and I know that that's one of your key focus areas at Jam. So can you talk to the listeners through why you believe document generation is a vital component of the intelligent automation toolbox?
Yeah, I've been in document automation for a long time. It was one of my first gigs that I had. It was with a document automation company. And I did a lot of speaking at different events and conferences around what document automation is and why it's important. And I used to always stand up and go, by the way, I'm just going to tell you, what I'm about to say is not revolutionary. It's not cutting edge of technology. It's not a sexy thing to talk about, but it's an incredibly important thing for you to have in your solution. And the reasons for that is, we are still an incredibly document-centric world in terms of a business. Doesn't matter if I talk about, I'm not talking about paper, we're doing great guns in trying to move from paper into digital documents, but I'm telling you right now, I've got documents up on my screen in front of me, right? We build lots of documents for different purposes, but it is still a trend and it's still a technology that isn't that widely adopted. And it's also a thing where you have lots of different systems that produce documents, but not in a standardized way. So I've got an HR system that will produce HR contracts. I've got another system over here for finance that will produce invoices. I've got something else over here that does another set of documents. And it's never really been kind of standardized. And we see so many issues in larger institutions like financial institutions around risk and compliance with document generation that they just aren't solving currently. And they're still producing... People are sitting behind their desk, they're getting an email through or a correspondence through, they say, right, I now have to write a letter about this when it could be automated. So we see document generation as a core part of the wider solution. Anytime you need a document to be generated, we provide a tool that allows you to automate a template, find all those changeable bits of information, the business rules used to construct that template, put the placeholders in there, modularize your documents into reusable components so that when you want to generate it, you just pass in the information and it automatically builds it in the format that you need, either Word, email, PDF, whatever that might be. And then it is a compliant document built to the rules and regulations, the governance that you put around that process, so you can guarantee that that document is compliant when you send it out. And the reason I still think this is important is because I go into organizations and say, how do you generate that document? Well, how do we generate our contracts? How do we do this? And mainly people are saying, well, there's a three-step process to this. I find, rename, replace, right? So I go find a document that looks similar to the one I've generated before in a bottom drawer somewhere in my document management system, and it's for customer A. And then I say, okay, well, I then need to, do this same document for customer B. So I take it out of the document management system. I then rename it and say, this is now customer B's document. Now you've got a named document called customer B with customer A's information in it. Then I hack away at that document until I get to a point that I have decided that this is correct and I'm happy with it. But there are lots of errors in that. There could be miscellaneous data, metadata in there. It could have the wrong terms that were negotiated for customer A now in customer B's document. There are so many errors that could be within that process. And when we ask our customers, how do you do that? They're still producing manual documents. So I think document automation is such a core component because it is used in so many processes. And in order to standardize, you need a platform there that does it across all your systems. So as we look at Jam of implementing end-to-end solutions, document automation, along with RPA, along with workflow, along with the other tools that we have, gives you a platform to build your entire automation infrastructure on. And again, as I say, the world still revolves around contracts and documents, even if they're in digital form. We still need, even 30 years later, after being involved in one of the first companies that created document automation, it's still on the periphery of many people's automation strategies, but it solves so many problems and is core to so many processes.
Yeah, absolutely right. I mean, just thinking through some of the processes there, I mean, you think about onboarding an employee, right, and creating an offer letter, and then obviously putting together their contract, and then going through and I guess picking up their personal information and obviously storing that information. And then you look at companies and mutual NDAs and legal contracts, and just there's so many examples where document generation and automation is an absolutely key part of that end-to-end automation.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, awesome. Okay, well, the last thing we haven't chatted about just yet is that concept, practical AI. And I really like that term. So why don't you start off, can you describe to the listeners what you mean by practical AI? And then maybe talk to us a little bit about some of the partnerships that you have in that space.
Yes, practical AI. So one of the things when we founded Jam is that I did my best, and my colleagues will attest to this, is I did my best to ban certain phrases and buzzwords from our vocabulary as we talk to customers. And artificial intelligence was one of them. Now, I will still talk about it, but I want to put it in more context. And the reason it comes back to the way we do things at Jam is we're more focused on the solution, providing a solution with great people and great technology, than the components really that build up that solution. So yes, if we have a solution that involves doing procure to pay or something like that, we're going to use RPA workflow plus another couple of tools to DocGen to do that. That's great. But actually for the customer, it's not really about that. It's about providing a solution to their problem. So when we decided to take on a couple of solutions and say, right, these are artificial intelligence, this is part of that, I said, well, actually we need to talk not about it being artificial intelligence. It's actually a product that solves a problem. It just so happens that it uses artificial intelligence to do it, because it debunks a lot of the myths and problems that people have with artificial intelligence, because it actually solves a problem. So there's this quip that I saw on Twitter once. I'd love to be able to find out where it came from because it's great, and I've put it on the website and I've got a reference somewhere to it that I can send out later. But you know, this quip: if it's written in Python, it's probably machine learning. If it's written in PowerPoint, it's probably AI. Right? So we really need to talk about like the solution to the problem, not that it's artificial intelligence there. So when we looked around at the market and said, well, what are the problems we try and solve? A product called Reinfair was something we've been looking into for a while. And Reinfair is all about, companies have thousands of communications with customers or internal communications, thousands, millions coming into their organization every year. How do you know what's in there? Genuinely, how do you know what's in there? How do you know about the data? How do you know what the content is? How do you know what the entities are that's in there, when they were sent, what the trends are? And the fact is most people do not know, right? How do you resolve that problem? So Reinfair is a platform. It allows you to ingest all of your communication information. And then first of all, in the background, it runs, I'm going to get into a little bit of tech here, but it runs an algorithm that then clusters and groups the communications together and says, I think these communications belong together because they've got similar patterns inside them. And that's the first stage. It groups communications together into logical groupings. The next thing it does is it then allows you to then go in and review those classifications, those clusters of grouped content that look similar, and then validate them and say, actually, yes, all of these, say for an insurance company, all of these are about a claim. Actually, more specifically, all of these are about car insurance claim or a car crash claim, whatever that might be, or an art claim, something like that. And it groups them all together and allows you to validate that the algorithm got it right. It also allows you to then go, well, actually within this communication, this date here, this is the date of the incident. This number here is the policy number, this. And it allows you to start tagging these things within your communication content. And what it does at the very same time, it allows you, and in the background, it builds effectively a model of that, those data points, structure of those labels that you're saying this is about this topic and things like that. And it builds this model and it trains the model based on all that communication information that you have. And eventually what you get to, and actually quite quickly, is you get to a point where you can use it to predict what an email is about or communication is about. So you send an email, it monitors your email and it says, I know with 99% certainty this email is about this. It has all this information in it. What would you like me to do with it? And then it can be pushed onto another process later on. So like an RPA bot can monitor that queue of the communication coming in and say, Re:infer has classified this information with all this content on it. What do you want to do? And it also has some amazing dashboard capabilities to show you insights into your communication. And a bit like some of the other tools like Automation Hub and things like that, where it allows you to monitor processes and give you information that allows you to then automate on the back of it. It gives you the dashboard and to say, well, actually, these are the trends we're seeing in your communication. This is where we think you need to refine your models to make better predictions. And here's where we think there's opportunities for automation around your communication within your business. It is super intelligent. And I'm not going to profess to understand absolutely everything that goes on behind the scenes, but at its base level, it's a phenomenal technology to be able to solve a real problem of communication data within organizations.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like another amazing tool in the intelligent automation toolbox. And yeah, just from what you explained there, I mean, I think there's many, many scenarios in a huge amount of companies out there where they have that massive pain point, and that may be a good solution to that specific problem. Absolutely. All right. Well, Grammar, listen, I think that's been another great episode. So firstly, I want to say thank you once again for sharing your invaluable insights and how you and the Jam Automation team view the wonderful world of intelligent automation. But just before we say goodbye, are there any parting thoughts or comments that you'd like to leave the listeners with?
Not really. It's been fun to chat, fun to hear your experiences about how you see the automation space. We love to help our customers with solutions. We're excited to be a part of this process automation space. There's a huge amount of potential, and we know that there's actually a huge amount of space for people who maybe need some help on their process automation journey and things like that. So hopefully we, along with other companies in our space, can really debunk the myths, help people turn kind of the disparate process they have into automation solutions in a good way. And yeah, looking forward to seeing how this process automation space over the next few years really drives on, and you know what in 5 years we're going to be talking about next in this space. So yeah, pleasure to be here today.
Excellent. Yeah. And we often say to our customers, it's no longer about if you're going to do this anymore. It's really about when you're going to do it, and when can be today. So with that, thanks very much once again for joining us, Graham. It's great to have such a like-minded company as part of the Automation Alliance Global Network. Thanks again for your time, and we look forward to speaking to you soon.
Be part of the community and join the Automation Alliance at www.automationalliance.com.